I really meant it when I said after the chalice singers and now for the closing words, except we hadn't had Conrad speak yet. But if you think about it, and you'll hear that in today's service, you actually had the chalice as a symbol, and I'll speak to that as a compass. And then you had love is something, if you give it away, compassion. And then you had the story of how Conrad lives this in his life. There's your message. Sing a song. Go home with hope in your hearts. That's what I mean. The title of this was All of Us. But you can say that a lot of different ways. And we tend to say all of us. But what if we accented the last word? All of us. That is one interrelated human family, a wider love, no exceptions. And once you start thinking that way, then when we say, it's great to be alive in the Blue Ridge Mountains, I realize when we do that, and I didn't set that up. I mean, I was just going to say that. For some of us, not so much. So it's important to realize that. One human family, a wider love, great to be alive in the Blue Ridge Mountains, no exceptions. So I was thinking this. I was also getting ready for this evening's class, which is Spiritual Orientation to Unitarian Universalism. It's the first class in an introduction to a history series, and you can read about that in your insert. But then I went, and I was thinking about and reading back over what I'd written about where this orientation comes from. And by the way, when I read over it, I did a pretty good job of writing it up. So if you'd like a copy of what the people are going to get tonight, just speak to me, and it'll let you know. But what it is, it's a simple exposition of the guide, the compass, that always brings me back to all of us. All of us. Over and over and over again. It's what informs my spiritual practice. And when I say it's my compass, it's when I get lost in these days and all that I'm seeing and all that I'm hearing. It's what brings me back. It's what grounds me, we say, or brings me back to where I am. We've talked about the chalice as a symbol. Real quickly, these outer circles can be our traditions. Many of you have heard me say this, but it helps to be reminded. Unitarianism, and we'll hear about some of this in a way, an exalted view of human possibility, of what we can become, and of the religious exemplars that we should live our lives in relation to. William Ellery Channing called it growing our soul. That's the particular. The general is universalism, which is an inclusive universe, a loving God, a wider love that we are held in. So that's where I was getting the all of us, no exceptions. And then you see that the flame, the chalice, actually grows out of these circles. The flame being our action, what we do, our choices, what we choose to do with our lives. And then the fourth piece in there is what? It's a space, right? That's that space. It's how we take the nature of being, or you can say God's love, however you want to do it, the inclusive universe, how we see it, how we orient, how it comes through, and then how we make that vision real. It's actually what we've referred to as the beloved community, that embrace for doing just the making the vision real. Parker Palmer talks about leadership as creating a space in which human abundance can be practiced. So that's that space, that embrace. Interrelatedness, inclusiveness, justice, possibility shared, beloved community. Martin Luther King was the person who made the notion of beloved community a real part of our vocabulary. And here are some quotes for what he says. And they sound just like our coming from our tradition, because they're coming from a similar what? Orientation. It's a similar compass that he's using. Our goal is to create a beloved community, and this will require a qualitative change in our souls as well as a quantitative change in our lives. It will require a change in how we love and how we give that preference. Love is creative and redemptive. Love builds up and unites. Hate tears down and destroys. The aftermath of the fight with fire method is bitterness and chaos. The aftermath of the love method is reconciliation and creation of the beloved community. Yes, love, which means understanding, creative, redemptive, goodwill, not legal will and ability, but good will. The good will, even for one's enemies. That is the solution. We cannot sit around and talk about the beloved community. We must make it real in our moments, in our lives, in our town, in our nation. If we want a beloved community, we must stand for justice. We must stand for justice, have recognition for difference without attaching difference to privilege. Bell Hooks says that the beloved community is formed not by the eradication of difference, but by its affirmation, by each of us being able to claim the identities and cultural legacies that shape who we are and how we lived in the world. Beloved community, loved common unity, or the common unity of love. All of us, all of us, both emphases. We have taken the move to make real here a piece of the beloved community with our Dream Scholarship Program and our interactions. We've made it with our children, not talk. And we've developed, I've experienced through this program a qualitative change in my soul. I feel it inside. I know people who were the other, who are now personal human hearts that I've connected with. I know that I've changed how I love and how I view the people around me. I feel it inside. I think some of you feel it inside. It's that practical, real experience of love. We've made that connection real so that we're not just talking about beloved community. And you can go on about what it's not and what it hasn't been and what it isn't and why it isn't and all of that. But here's what it is and how it is real. One of the connections I have to admit to is that this whole idea, I think, came about because of my child. I can't remember the sequence of events, but my daughter had to write her persuasive speech in 10th grade for Miss Flexon, and she wrote it on the Dream Scholarship. Why did she write it on that? Because the people in her classes were her friends, and she saw that they were not going to have the opportunity that she just took for granted. And so she wrote this persuasive speech about why the Dream Act should be passed. That was my child connecting me with our children, the children of Hendersonville, the children who have grown up here, but whose parents were not documented American citizens. But they're our children, the children of Hendersonville. These are your children. And they're your children. If they're your children, these families that are their families are your families. The question we asked when we established the scholarship, the Dream Scholarship, was how can we make or help make, because we can't make it, how can we make a difference in Hendersonville to help make it be a more caring community? How can we contribute to its heart? Beloved community. And that's what we did. And it's changed many of our lives. So we're talking about all of us, our children, their families, this town, our world. Judy Long, Reverend Judith Long, is minister, director of the Free Clinics, and she's a mother. And she's one of the people who took this energy and helped make it happen. Our social justice outreach team was a big part of it too. It spread to other congregations and other people. The other piece is that beloved community is never an arrival. It's always an ever-expanding goal or horizon that's always in front of us. But that doesn't mean we stop trying to engage in those things that create it, because that's what it means to live well, is to keep doing that work, little pieces, moving towards that horizon even as it moves beyond us. It is never done, but it is the love of life and the living of life in that love. Judy.
I'm going to try and keep this open, so forgive me if I play with my phone for a minute. There's something I want to read. For the past 5 years, we have come before you to talk about our Dream Scholarship and to seek your support for this life-changing program. This year it feels different. It is different. And the sense of urgency could not be greater. But first, I want to do a little history on this scholarship. Jim touched on it a bit, but I'm going to go a little bit deeper. Do you know why it's called the Dream Scholarship? Does anybody? Okay. The Dream Act. The Dream, the word Dream, stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. It refers to legislation for those children, youth, and now young adults who were brought here by their parents as children. As Jim said, these are the kids who attend our schools, participate in activities, and consider themselves to be wholly part of our community. And many of them, in talking to them, have said they did not know they were undocumented. They did not know until they faced the thrilling and somewhat mundane rite of passage of taking driver's ed. Beginning in 2001, there was legislation introduced to create a path to full citizenship for these dreamers. And it did pass the House in 2010, but never received enough votes in the Senate. And it died in November 2011. Following the death of the Dream Act, Jim had a crucial conversation with Catherine Elder that while we could not change the national law, we might do something locally to create the community we want, to create a more loving community, to create that beloved community which embraced our local dreamers. And that idea ultimately created the Dream Scholarship. Now, it officially began, we did our first fundraising moment like this in the spring of 2012, and we gave our first scholarships in August 2012. We've given 27 awards to 17 dreamers from Henderson County. They've attended schools as diverse as Blue Ridge Community College, AB Tech, Brevard College, Greensboro College, Meredith College, Piedmont College, and UNCA. Seven are still in school. Carolina, who spoke to us many times, graduated in June of 2014 and co-owns a restaurant with her partner. America, who spoke to us as well, graduated in January of 2016 with her master's in the art of teaching English as a second language, has a job, and won an award as a new teacher in her first few months. Both Daniel and Alan will graduate Brevard College this year, though Alan, who spoke to us, has not needed our support for the past 2 years because he won a sponsored fellowship from General Electric that funded the last 2 years of his education. These are the children your dollars have supported. They matter. But truthfully, for all these incredible successes, there have been students who've struggled, mostly due to work responsibilities, inability to take a full course load, and the challenges inherent not only in being a dreamer, but being the first in your family to attend college. So to better support these youth, our Dream Committee and the Immigration Network locally embarked on a new service last year, recruiting and training mentors for first-generation college-bound students, starting with ninth graders, and helping them choose classes, develop strong study habits, prepare for college track testing like SATs and ACTs, and complete scholarship applications. This scholarship program has dramatically altered the lives of the 17 students we've supported. But even more profoundly, it has changed our community for the better. When I meet teachers and counselors and parents out in the community and they discover I'm part of this congregation and part of this program, usually they cry. And they thank me for our role in helping to create hope, for enabling them to give hope to their students and their children, for caring enough to create that community of hope here. Because the reality is, and I want you to own this, as much as there are seven congregations as diverse as Immaculata and Holy Family Episcopal, St. James Episcopal, La Capilla Episcopal, First Congregational, and Unity, as much as there are seven diverse congregations in this collaborative scholarship, it is our program. All the congregations help to fund it, and the representatives from the congregations review applications, interview the candidates, and collectively decide who to support. But we, our congregation, owns the fund at the Community Foundation, writes the checks to the students, and works with the colleges to manage their awards. Sandy and I are in phone conversation or email conversation with every college every semester. It is, this congregation is the rock upon which the scholarship happens. This is our statement of all of us. And at this time of history, we are truly feeling an urgency to do something. But hold on to this. This scholarship is one of the things that this congregation does. This amazing fellowship in Henderson County 5 years ago, and every day, we create hope for our local dreamers. We tangibly support their dreams. When you're feeling lost by the news, remember, this is one thing we do. The reality is, this has been a particularly ugly week for our immigrant and migrant neighbors. Since Thursday, over 400 people have been detained in an Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, surge. Raids have occurred in Los Angeles and the environs, Atlanta, Charlotte, Austin, Chicago, New York. Right now, 200 people from Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina are being held in the ICE field office in Atlanta. I, like many of you, was caught off guard by the suddenness of the ICE action, so I dug a little deeper, and I found a Wall Street Journal article that explained things for me very well. The executive order of January 25th not only addressed sanctuary cities, and that's where the media really went, but it greatly expanded the scope of ICE's deportation focus. See, under Obama, only those who had been convicted of a crime, usually a violent crime, were targeted for deportation. But the new executive order expands the protocol to include those charged with a crime that has not yet been adjudicated, those who've improperly received a government benefit, those who used a fake ID to secure and work, those who drive without a license, those who lied on any application or form ever, those deemed dishonest by immigration officials, or those who pose a risk to public safety, for which the ICE officers are granted substantial leeway to determine. I find myself heartbroken by the last several days, and my social media is filled with news stories, personal stories, and now flyers from the ACLU and the United We Dream about knowing your rights. Our neighbors are terrified, and the fear is palpable. My friends who work with immigrant communities are reaching out for advocacy, support, and organizing. And just this morning, nothing like receiving a call from Wayne County from a terrified family members that ICE came after a young widow and her child for missing their hearing, and then deported the entire household. Dangerous criminals, these were farm workers, and the only reason they didn't show up was because they couldn't afford the $200 fee someone was charging them to get to Charlotte. It's one thing to stand on your high horse and proclaim an entire population guilty, and another thing to bring yourself to the front lines and watch this happen. You wouldn't have the stomach for it. I know I don't, but for some strange reason, here I sit, wondering how the hell to fight back. They're poor people. Of course they came here searching for a better life. You would do no different for your own children. This is agony. And in this time, with this news, we find ourselves again wanting to do something. And there are things we can do. We can protest. We can write postcards. We can call all of our elected officials. We can make our voices heard. We can volunteer to mentor. We can engage with the Immigration Network and our local community here. And we can support this Dream Scholarship, which changes the lives of our local dreamers and gives hope to their friends, families, teachers, counselors, and all in our community. As Jim discussed this morning, it is times like these when we need religious communities. We need to be beacons of hope, to be support, to articulate visions of peace and justice, to do the work of creating beloved community right here at home. This is us. This is who we are, creating and continuously recreating a community of hope, love, and justice. In times of challenge, anger, and fear, it is the simplicity of touch, the simplicity of love, the simplicity of courage and connection that encourages us, sustains us, and heals us individually and collectively, and that creates the world we seek. Love in the face of fear, love in response to hate, love to build, nurture, and sustain dreams. The Henderson County Dream Scholarship is our statement of all of us, all of us, all of us. Our love in action, our response to anger and fear, our affirmation of the beloved community. At this time of challenge, when we feel the urge to do something, yes, do, but also hold in your hearts and remember that we are nurturing hope. We continue to build dreams. We love all of us.
You still want me to do that? Yeah. Thank you, Judy. The reading we had for earlier is from an article about dreamers, and this is one of the students. You can't really see it, but maybe you can see this is in her dorm room, standing in her dorm room, and that's how you do a dorm room, two desks. It says Dreamer on the top, but that other white space that you see under Dreamer says no human being is illegal. That's Indira Islas. And she grew up in Gainesville, Georgia. From the time she was 8 years old, just like Conrad did in this congregation, she grew up in Gainesville, Georgia. And now she attends Delaware State as part of the Dream U.S. Scholar. And she says that her determination to become a doctor requires more than a little imagination, because under current law in Georgia and many other states, licenses to practice medicine are reserved for citizens and legal residents. I'm not planning my life based on the way things are today, she said last fall. I'm thinking of the future. And in her eyes, America is a land of ever unfolding opportunity. Over Columbus Day weekend, she visited Washington for the first time with her roommate, Karen Baltazar, who is from Lawrenceville, Georgia, and also wants to be a doctor. At the Franklin Delano Roosevelt Memorial, Indira stood underneath Roosevelt's four freedoms: freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from want. What's the fourth? Freedom from fear. Her arms raised high above her head, as if exulting in the message. Her smile was radiant. Karen snapped a picture, and Indira posted it on her Facebook page along with the caption, "I have never forgotten the reasons my parents brought me to this great country." After the election, when Indira went home for Christmas, she found her mother more frightened than at any time since receiving her deportation order. Her mother has no choice but to drive her car, and she doesn't have a license. She has to do it to help take children for rides home. She's needed at a charity medical clinic where she volunteers as a doctor's assistant and translator. Guess what she was in Mexico? She was a doctor. Before they came to America, for whom? For their children. For their children and their children's lives. She says, "Life changed after the election," she told the author in December. In her living room, decorated with framed academic awards for each child, she was surrounded by her kids who listened carefully. "The children know I don't have a driver's license. They know at any time maybe the police will take me again. If I can't tell them, you have to go to school every day. You have to study hard, even harder." By the time Indira and the other opportunity scholars returned to campus in January, all of them had come to the same conclusion. There was now only one thing they could control: their education. The only way we can fight back is to excel in school. Indira wrote to me in a text message. She felt weary in the aftermath of the election, but when she had this epiphany, she said, "I wasn't tired anymore. I had that drive, that hunger to just come out on top. I was angry. I was staying at the library longer, going to the gym a lot more." She said, "I don't know what will happen next, but we're here in this place, and the only way we can win is to succeed in our education. The only way we can fight back is to excel in school."
So I invite you to give generously to this scholarship this year. I invite you every year to give generously, but it feels like this year matters that much more for what we create locally for those kids who need our support.